Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT. Bandwidth for Tech News Today is provided by CashFly at CACHEFLY.com.
This is Tech News Today for Thursday, August 5th, 2010. Tech News Today is brought to you by GoToAssist Express. If you're in tech support, save time and money by supporting your clients and colleagues remotely with GoToAssist Express. For a free 30-day trial, visit GoToAssist.com/TNT. Welcome to Tech News Today. I'm Tom Merritt.
Hey, I'm Becky Worley.
And I'm Dr. Kiki.
Behind the board is our spirited producer, Jammerby, today, once again filling in for Eric.
Hello.
Eric's upstairs pushing out the hits. He's got the Detroit.
Right.
He's got the Detroit Maker Faire stuff that we got. It's all the special stuff from last week. We got to make it happen.
I'm so excited to see what he puts together from that.
So he is the hardworking Eric Lanigan upstairs.
Yes,
he'll be back tomorrow.
In abstentia.
And what kind of stench? Don't.
Yeah,
be nice.
Smell of it.
Pentagon. Kind of looked like they'd smelled something bad when they had their press conference today about WikiLeaks. Not too happy. The Defense Department spokesperson Jeff Morrell ordered WikiLeaks to remove classified documents and return them to the U.S. government. I wonder if he knows they're digital.
Give them back. You can just come get them.
We'll just delete them.
Yeah, we'll just delete them.
Yeah, you can download them if you want.
Yeah.
It was reported on Tuesday that WikiLeaks had asked the Department of Defense for help in reviewing the remaining 15,000 classified documents that it obtained that it hadn't posted. And the Department of Defense says, no, that did not happen. They want WikiLeaks to remove the documents from online. They want them to return the documents, as they continually said. And so there is definitely a beef going on now. This is not a friendly.
And it's a hard beef to police, too. I mean, for the Pentagon, an organization that's used to getting their way and dropping the hammer, this is not an easy thing for them to get their way. And that's because WikiLeaks is a stateless news organization now. That's the way it's been classified by people who really observe media, Jay Rosen, Jeff Jarvis. And they say the fact that they have servers in multiple countries, the fact that Julian Assange, the head of WikiLeaks, is sort of a man of mystery.
He's
right,
ghost-like.
Tom, he just pops up.
Yeah, you want Julian Assange, you just say his name three times, he appears, and then he disappears, and you never know how he got there.
It's magic.
No, I mean, all seriousness, he sort of lives out of a suitcase, and he changes his itinerary up, he doesn't let people know where it is, he kind of appears without notice, and, you know, very rarely he has these planned appearances, and you never know where he's staying or when he's arriving.
And you mentioned this in terms of why this communication and this threat is coming from the Pentagon. So WikiLeaks released all of the documents they did, but they held back 15,000 because they felt that they contained sensitive information and they didn't want that to be made public. Yeah. But they're saying to the Pentagon, we need your help in properly redacting important information, but we are going to release these. So what do you guys think? Is this just a horrible position for the Pentagon to be in? And is being aggressive towards WikiLeaks really the right solution?
I don't think being aggressive is ever the right solution in situations like this. It's just going to get WikiLeaks back up, and they're going to stop trying to cooperate with the Pentagon. I mean, and since it is an organization that, as you said, has servers all over the place, those documents can be copied all over the place. They can be put on a flash drive, a thumb drive. You know, they could be copied hundreds of thousands of times and put in places all over the world, and there's no reason whatsoever that WikiLeaks needs to cooperate.
WikiLeaks boasts that submitting confidential material is safe, easy, and protected by law. Of course, they mean the laws of Sweden in this case.
Yep.
But Morrell, the spokesperson for the Pentagon, said the website essentially constitutes a brazen solicitation to U.S. government officials, including our military, to break the law. WikiLeaks responded by Twitter, calling the Pentagon representative obnoxious and the request a threat. So you're right, Kiki. This is not a friendly negotiation. This isn't a way, you know, you could look at what WikiLeaks did with the 15,000 documents as perhaps a step in the right direction. Maybe you disagree. Maybe you're angry that they posted the 70,000 documents. But keeping some of them and possibly being willing to not publish them if discussed would be a step in the right direction. This is going to obviate that, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. And the fact that they did go to the Pentagon and say that we will redact some of these documents because we know they are sensitive.
Well, the Pentagon disputes that. They say they never did come to us. So that's a he said, she said. Yeah.
We'll see how it all plays out.
We will. Meanwhile, it's like it's fall already. We've got news today. I'm so excited. So last night, there were a few reports out that Google and Verizon had come together on a deal to end net neutrality. And of course, net neutrality, if you've been living in a hole, is this idea of not allowing some bits to be preferred over other bits. So, in other words, Google can't go in and pay a bunch of money to an ISP and have their video and their blogs delivered priority over your blog and video. It's everybody's bits are treated equally and nobody gets preference. Nobody gets degraded.
But the New York Times.
Yesterday we had these reports.
Yeah, it was really interesting, right, Tom, in terms of the New York Times came out and said, I'm going to quote from you directly because what the New York Times said is at issue, which is very unusual for the paper of record here. They said Google and Verizon, two leading players in internet service and content, are nearing an agreement that could allow Verizon to speed some online content to internet users more quickly if the content's creators are willing to pay for the privilege. That's exactly what you're talking about. Then they go on to say people close to the negotiations, in other words, unnamed sources, said Google would agree not to challenge Verizon's ability to manage its broadband internet network as it pleased. And that's really something that's an issue because Bloomberg says that's not what it was going on, that there would be no prioritization on wired networks, but that Verizon could do whatever it wanted with its data traffic on wireless networks. Is that how you understood it, Tom?
Yeah, well, when I read the story last night, I thought, oh, this is interesting. Verizon, Google have worked out net neutrality on wireline. I went to sleep. I woke up this morning and everyone's in a rage about this story. And I'm like, why are they mad? It's a good thing for the wired line. I mean, I guess it's not good for wireless. And this New York Times story had gone further and said that there would be allowed this sort of tiering of wireline internet. There have been some denials since then, though. On their Google Public Policy Twitter page, Google says, at New York Times is wrong. We've not had any convos with VZN about paying for carriage of our traffic. We remain committed to an open internet. A little bit later today, Verizon came out and said the New York Times article regarding conversations between Google and Verizon is mistaken. It fundamentally misunderstands our purpose. As we said in our earlier FCC filing, our goal is an internet policy framework that ensures openness and accountability and incorporates specific FCC authority while maintaining investment and innovation. To suggest this is a business arrangement between our companies is entirely incorrect. So usually when you get these kind of denials from people, you don't get such firm like they're wrong, entirely incorrect. These sort of, they're usually trying to weasel around something that's partly true. So it sounds like New York Times got something wrong.
Yeah, and the FCC chairman, Julius Janikowski, came out and said these kind of backroom deals are not what we're trying to do. We are trying to preserve net neutrality. And I think it's worth just going back and looking at what the issue is here from the FCC's perspective. If you remember back in April, the D.C. Circuit Court of Appeals said that the FCC had no right to administer any oversight on Comcast, who was throttling BitTorrent traffic. And they said that was because broadband internet service is currently classified through the Communications Act, which is very lightly regulated. But the FCC is trying to get broadband internet service regulated through the telecommunications as a telecommunications service, which means that like telephone service, it'll have a lot more government oversight.
It's a different title of telecommunications service than it currently is.
Right, not communications, telecommunications. So I think that, the bottom line is whether this story is true or not, there will be issues coming to the front as we see service providers trying to manage our increased traffic and trying to monetize it so that if the FCC doesn't get this oversight, this kind of thing will happen, whether it's true now or not. You agree?
Well, yeah, but there's a couple more facts we need. There's so much stuff going on. It's complicated. Yeah. Because later today in a CNBC interview, Eric Schmidt said that net neutrality he advocates is not a neutrality between different types of content, but between the same type of content. He wanted to make sure that there's no discrimination between one video downloaded and another. So under that rubric, a YouTube video would not get discriminatory treatment over my video. At least that's what Jeff Jarvis wrote on Buzz Machine. And that starts to make a little more sense of what actually may have taken place between Google and Verizon. And then, to make things make less sense, the FCC's chief of staff, Edward Lazarus, just said in a statement that the effort to negotiate network neutrality amongst many people, not just Verizon and Google, but all kinds of stakeholders, including Amazon and eBay and the EFF and all kinds of people, has been productive on several fronts, quote, but has not generated a robust framework to preserve the openness and freedom of the internet. All options remain on the table as we continue to seek broad input on this vital issue, and they have called off closed-door talks with lobbyists aimed at reaching a compromise on the new rules. So let's back up out of all this information, and here's what happened. As of yesterday, the FCC was conducting these conversations. Sometime within the past couple of days, Verizon and Google met with the FCC. Yesterday, a story broke that Verizon and Google had come to some sort of arrangement. It breaks. It's exaggerated. Google and Verizon deny particular parts of it. And then the FCC comes in and says, you know what? We're calling off the lobbyist talks.
Forget it. You guys figure it out for yourselves.
It's less of that, that you guys figure it out for yourselves, and it's more of the forget it. We're going to figure it out in a different way, and you guys don't get exclusive access to us anymore.
Right.
I think your point about what Jeff Jarvis was saying is probably the root of what happened. So if I can summarize, basically, and this is the Eric Schmidt thing, saying, you know what? We're going to talk to Verizon. Google and Verizon are going to talk about, hey, let's make sure that all video is prioritized because it's time sensitive and that email takes a back door in terms of delivery, and that someone got this information wrong and thought that it was a direct conflict or a direct challenge to net neutrality. This big blank storm blew up, and now the FCC is saying, you know what, these talks weren't going anywhere anyways, so let's just deal with this ourselves. What do you think?
I think that sums it.
I think you're summing it up really well. And I think with all of this, I mean, the question that has anybody really been asking, you know, what is the benefit to Google, to Verizon, to each of these companies who have originally said, yeah, we're for net neutrality. What's the benefit of them to go behind, in closed doors and to come up with some kind of a secret arrangement? Is Google for wired line stuff, is that going to benefit them that much? Maybe not. But in terms of wireless, if you're looking at how email versus video is being prioritized, that could be something that in the mobile realm is going to be really important, especially with Google and the Android phones and Verizon having a few of those.
All right. We should move on to another morass next, which is the RIM situation in the Middle East. RIM CEO Michael Lazaridis made an interview public on Wednesday at the Wall Street Journal and said, if they can't deal with the internet, they should shut it off.
Yeesh.
He's talking about Saudi Arabia and the United Arab Emirates and all of the countries who have said we're going to block particular services of BlackBerry from operating in our country. We've talked about these before. So not only did he say that, but now Lebanon has joined a growing list of countries. The country's telecoms regulatory authority said it will assess security concerns about the device following on the UAE and India and Saudi Arabia. Indonesia has said that they're going to ask for special treatment of the BlackBerry data. They're not making any demands yet, but they're sort of raising their voice about it. And now Secretary of State Hillary Clinton says she's going to go to the United Arab Emirates and hold talks with them over the BlackBerry dispute. Mrs. Clinton says the authorities had to balance legitimate concerns with the rights of free use and access. We are taking time to consult and analyze the full range of interests and issues at stake because we know that there is a legitimate security concern. So this is pulling in the government now.
And to remind people, the issue here is that the UAE and all these states say that because of the encryption and the way that it works with RIM devices, they cannot monitor in a time-sensitive way or at all, in many cases, any communications that may challenge state security. And I think actually, you know, we've tried to have an open mind about this. It seems like, hey, it's the BlackBerry, get off their case. But there's an interesting counterpoint here that I want your thoughts on, Tom. So Bruce Schneier, who's just a genius when it comes to security and encryption and issues around this, he points out that RIM has made backroom deals to give governments access to their encryption keys in the past. And this whole thing that we've talked about, hey, the RIM saying, we don't have the encryption. It's just between the servers and the phones themselves. But you know what? That's just, Schneier makes the point, how's that possible? They're providing the service. They have the encryption key, and they've made deals with other countries to make information available if warrants come to them in and through the proper channels. So there's something about this that just doesn't jibe from RIM. If they're doing it for some countries, and now the UAE and Lebanon and Indonesia all want, and the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia all want this same ability, well, huh? Well, I don't get it.
I mean, you know, I'm not going to pretend to be a security expert, but there's definitely a way in public key encryption where you can withdraw your key, and then the other person is no longer able to get at your encryption anymore. But I think maybe what Schneier is saying is because BlackBerry is running this whole service end to end, that the user isn't likely to withdraw their key. And so if the user keeps their key and BlackBerry has the other key, then BlackBerry should be able to go in and see what's in the encrypted channels. I guess that's what he's saying. I mean, Schneier is a whole lot smarter than me.
Well, and he makes the other really good point, because I know there are a lot of corporate IT guys that are going, hey, but we have that stuff on our servers in-house. He's talking about their consumer product, and that's what's really at issue here. A lot of these governments have made the distinction that they don't want corporate encryption keys and corporate access to servers. They're talking about consumer products, and that's where this all really is lying, is in like burner BlackBerries or consumer products that might be used in an aggressive or a violent way if they were being used for terrorism. So, I mean, that's, I think, one interesting sidebar of this, and I think it's interesting that this is really playing out in the public eye.
Yeah, I think the historical aspect of this is really interesting as well, that we went through this in the 1990s, and there was a statement from Seth Schoen and the EFF on their blog, the Deep Links blog. He says that this UAE government position seems just like 1995 all over again, with government officials insisting that some privacy tools are just too secure to let the public use them.
Yeah, it's
just, we can't let the public have this, but there's right. The other side of the UAE maybe wanting to monitor.
Well, and that goes back to PGP being outlawed and banned, and they tried to stop it from export. You're not going to be able to stop this sort of thing, and these countries are just starting to grapple with that, and they've picked on BlackBerry as their target. I don't think it's... I want to find out a little more about what Schneier means by this, because I don't think it's beyond the pale to say that, you know, there's some encryption in place that BlackBerry couldn't crack, especially if these countries are saying we want all access to the entire, you know, database at any time. You know, there might be ways to go in and get the keys out of the phones on a case by case basis, but I still think it would be difficult. So I don't think BlackBerry's totally blowing smoke when they say that this is not something they can easily do. But Becky, you brought up something that I do want to know the answer is, when they are accused, BlackBerry doesn't agree with this, but when they are accused of having arrangements with the U.S. and Russia, they say, we don't know what you're talking about. We don't have any arrangements with the U.S. and Russia to give them encrypted data. That just doesn't exist.
You buying that?
Well, if they, you know... I am not aware of any, but I would like to know what these other countries mean when they say, well, the U.S. already has access to this, because maybe there is something that they have access to, but I don't think it's the same thing that these new states are asking for.
Right.
Well, and I think that actually, to answer your question, as I'm looking back here through my notes, he said, Lazaridis, the RIM CEO, said, I would give them the encrypted stream, but it would have to be like a wiretap with a warrant.
Right, so, and it'd still be the encrypted stream. It's still encrypted. So what good does it do? So they can try to crack it themselves?
Well, where's the key? They have a warrant for the key, and RIM has it.
Well, RIM doesn't, have,
RIM doesn't has, necessarily have it.
RIM has one key, and yeah. The phone user has the other. So then you got to go seize the phone and get the other key.
Ooh, and it's so intriguing.
So Alice... Alice is the government, is BlackBerry. Bob, never mind. All right, let's...
both on a train going in opposite directions.
We've already got way too many emails going to come and correct us about this story, so let's move on
to... Wow, we're in deep caca.
Let's do move on to one I know a lot more about, which is purses.
Purses.
In the U.S. and EU, Google is now going to be allowed to sell AdWords to trademarks that you don't own. So if you say, look, I want to buy my ad for my apple orchard, and I want it to show up whenever anybody searches for Apple Computer. Apple Computer can't sue you. Or they're not Apple Computer anymore. They're just Apple. Apple can't sue you for using their keyword. And this has particularly been tried when people who sell Louis Vuitton-like bags have have put up and bought ads that go with Louis Vuitton's name. Louis Vuitton has sued on this, and they've lost in Europe.
And the point that came out of that case is if you're looking for Louis Vuitton, which I was not when I purchased this $1 purse that sort of resembles a Louis Vuitton purse. If you're looking for Louis Vuitton and you come up on a keyword search that says Louis Vuitton replica, Louis Vuitton fake, you as a human being can make the distinction that that is not Louis Vuitton. So that's where this all comes from, is the government has said, hey, you know what? People are smarter than that. You can't just own the search words like you own the trademark.
They're not going to think all the ads go to official Louis Vuitton places just because it says Louis Vuitton. This has also been used to try to silence competitors. Like, so Honda buys Toyota as a keyword. They've tried to sue and say, no, you can't do that. You know, you don't want people searching for Toyota and then clicking on your Honda ad over there.
Well, Honda certainly does, and that should be fine.
Yeah.
All's fair and
In keyword searching.
Keyword searching. Yeah.
You know that old saying.
That old saying. Exactly.
Gosh, that's such a maxim. I'm going to think about that one for a long time.
All right. While you think about that one, I'm going to thank our sponsor, GoToAssist Express. If your job's in tech support, there's an easy way to save you some time and money. When Alice has that problem on her computer and you, as Bob, the tech support person, want to help her out, you can look like a hero without ever leaving your chair. GoToAssist Express, brought to you by our friends at Citrix, is an easy and secure way to support your clients and colleagues online. Enables you to see the problem on their machine without having to be there in person and then solve it. In fact, if you, Bob, have the problem, you don't have to have anything installed on your machine. As long as Alice has GoToAssist Express, it's specifically designed for small businesses and professionals to support clients. And it means you can start supporting them online instantly. You just share your screen. You can see what they see. They can find out what you need them to do. You can guide them through stuff, includes integrated live chat so you can have a conversation. You diagnose the problem. You fix the problem. You don't have to leave and you don't have to fly and you don't have to talk on the phone and say, what does that file menu say? You can see it right there on the screen. So try GoToAssist Express for free for 30 days by visiting GoToAssist.com/TNT. And when you go to buy your Chevy Volt, make sure that you're getting charged a reasonable amount of money.
I think that's something that people should think about whenever they try and buy something.
Well, yes, that's a good point. You should always think
reasonable?
About that.
Is this reasonable? Are you being gouged?
But what's going on here is, according to this story, some dealerships are telling people that they have to pay an additional $20,000 on top of the $41,000 manufactured suggested retail price for the Chevy Volt. And GM itself is saying, whoa, yeah, I guess dealers can do whatever they want, but don't pay that much.
Yeah,
go to another dealer.
The dealers are all independent. They are licensed to sell the cars, but they're independent in the sense that they can actually set the prices that they sell them for themselves. The base price is the price that they have to start at. The suggested retail price is where they start, but they really can charge you whatever they want. But this sounds like the case of Chevy dealerships being a little bit greedy for a little piece of that that green E action.
Yeah,
it is interesting around supply and demand too. This does tell you that there is significant demand for the new Volt. GM has said that they're going to be jacking up the Volt production by 50%. They're going to put out 45,000 cars, but obviously dealers are getting a lot of inquiries.
Yeah, and it's not, like Kiki says, it's not an unusual practice to do this, but 50% markup, that is pretty steep. And I think it's because of the rarity of these cars. There's not that many made in this first run. And so even though GM is saying, look, customers, contact other dealers for more quotes if you're presented with a premium charge above the sticker price, There will come a point where there isn't another dealer. You've only got the guy charging $60,000 for the $41,000 volt. And so then you have the choice of either paying the premium or waiting until the next round of volts get manufactured next year.
Which, you know, unless you're an early adopter, you know, might be a good idea.
Yeah. I you know, some folks in the chat room are saying, oh, this has happened with plenty of cars before. I would like to know if it's ever been 50%. Somebody's saying it happened with a Mazda Miata, so maybe that's true. But it is the steepest markup I've ever seen, percentage-wise, put it that way. Moving on to the iPod Touch 4, we have purported pictures of it. In fact, we got a whole lot of Apple leaks.
They're pictures,
here.
But they're purported to be pictures.
Well, here's what they did. They took the case manufacturer's photo illustration, and then they sort of say, hey, if this is the case, and it's got a space for the camera, then the iPod Touch 4 must have a camera. And if it's got, you know, a rounded back on the case, well, the iPod Touch 4 must have a rounded back. And they sort of reverse engineered the picture from there. We also have a bunch of other leaks. New iPhone coming at the start of 2011. This according to Jeremy Horowitz at iLounge. Horowitz himself says he finds this one hard to believe, but he hears there's a new iPhone coming at the start of the year, and it could be repacked to avoid the antenna problem. Doesn't say whether it would be on Verizon or not. Also, Apple's going to make a new group of bumpers, more rubbery, and give them away with every iPhone. I've heard that one before.
Rubber baby iPhone bumpers?
Yes. These will be the baby iPhone bumpers. Exactly. Apple's going to release a 7-inch version of the iPad mini. I've heard this one before as well. And new iPods coming this month or in September. That is the safest bet of all of these because they always do a fall iPod announcement. So we expect to see another one.
Okay, so iPad mini or iPad with camera. What do you lay your bets?
iPad mini. iPad with camera comes next year.
Why?
Because they refresh these things in year cycles unless they do a variation. So with iPod, let's go way back into the days of the iPod. You'd get a new iPod every fall, but iPod mini came out in the fall too, now that I'm thinking about it. But I think the Shuffle came out of cycle. Mm-hmm. One of them came out, maybe it was the Nano, I can't remember. So it's possible if they're going to do a different form factor spin, they might introduce that out of shuffle or out of cycle.
Shuffle.
Okay, well, we need to record these bets here and now and place some sort of wager on it. So.
I want to know if people would want a different sized or a different form factor iPad.
Cheap.
Just cheaper.
I want an iPad. I can't afford even the $500 one. Here's an iPad.
Do an iPod Touch? Isn't that what we're talking about?
That's exactly what I'm thinking. It's like it's.
But the iPod Touch is too small. I want an iPad.
Okay, so it's
fine.
It's,
we'll give you a 7-inch iPad.
Marketing.
It's $299.
iPad Mini or iPod Touch Maxi?
These are all jokes from when the iPod Mini came out. Everyone was like.
I'm just thinking about a straight marketing play. Like, it's a big iPod Touch.
Who wanted the iPod Mini, right? Everyone said that, but they sold like hotcakes because people, even though it was like, but it's just the iPod and it's smaller and has less capacity. Why would
I
want that?
You're still going to have issues at 7 inches with putting the iPad Mini in. I mean, it might fit in a smaller purse, but I mean, you're still not going to fit it in your pocket. It's still not as nicely portable as the iPod. Pod Touch or
they'll
an
be
iPhone
coming out with a new line of clothing too.
Yes, I believe that would
with
be the best.
iPad Mini pocket vest.
Yeah, they'll be looking out for that.
All right,
more ways to spend your money.
That's exactly what it's about. You've nailed it right there.
Yeah.
All right, where are we? I've lost my place.
At the news fuse.
Is it time? We're going to rename the lightning round. We decided in the pre-show, and thanks to whoever suggested news fuse. We'll burn through the stories fast, and they'll end with a bang.
Go. Okay.
You're first.
More news from the Brits, and for the Brits. The UK government is sticking with Internet Explorer 6, saying it's too expensive and a royal pain in the tuchus to upgrade. All right, they didn't say the royal pain thing, but I just like the royal jokes. They do say the government continues to work with Microsoft to understand the security of the products used by Her Majesty's government. So IE6, staying in the UK.
Boo! Boo to you, British government. Get rid of IE6. It's a bane on our existence. It is beneath the royal personage. Queen Elizabeth, I urge you to take direct action on this. WiMAX champion Clearwire announced plans Thursday to start trial testing 4G LTE technology this fall. The move will not only allow the company to showcase the capabilities of the technology, but also allow it to examine a variety of potential future technology combinations. Is this the beginning of the end of WiMAX?
Google has announced that the discontinued Nexus One lives on and is its new developer phone. It'll ship with Android 2.1, but receive 2.2 shortly after you turn it on. If you have developer credentials, you can log in and get your order in right now. Nexus One, old phone, $529.
Oh, 529 bones. Got that nowhere. As news of jailbreaking iPhones has grown in the past few days, you may have heard that one of the ways a browser-based jailbreak tool worked was through a PDF vulnerability. We talked about that previously on TNT. Apple has now acknowledged the flaw and another PDF flaw and says they are planning to deploy a fix soon. So if you want the easy-peasy Safari jailbreak, get it now or don't upgrade to the new version when they fix it.
That
all right.
Was it. The news fuse. Where's our bang?
Bang!
Thanks to Von Dutch, by the way, who took responsibility. He's claimed responsibility for the name News Fuse.
Thanks.
So, nice work.
About time something.
And from there, we go to poop.
Yes.
Yes.
Finally, methane-powered car that runs on human excrement.
Finally!
Oh. It's a VW Beetle car, actually.
You're missing a toilet somewhere?
It runs on methane and has been developed in an attempt to encourage sustainable motoring. Motoring, because, you know, it is the BBC, after all.
Yes.
That we're getting this story from.
Accent.
So what's this car about? Do you know about this car, Kiki?
Very little, actually, but I know enough that the basis is a pretty well-known process that takes sewage, raw sewage, and converts it, gets the gas out of it, the methane gas, and then it's just a normal methane gas powered engine.
That is important because there's not a whole lot you can do with this shit.
Yeah.
But get this.
There's a whole lot of crap going on in the UK.
So yeah.
Sewage plant could run cars over 95 million miles in a year. That's pretty impressive.
It's very impressive.
Well, and I'm serious.
Like, well, it is for real. It's for real. It's the question of how well this could be, how it'll be adopted by the public, and also how hard it would be to have this kind of a car. I mean, how many sewage stations are you going to be able to drive up to gas up your car? You know, where is that going to come from?
Well, not yet. We have to, you know, create sewage outlets all over the city. maybe septic tanks could be opened up. But I was serious when there's not a whole lot you can do with this because you can't compost it. You can't, you know, it's too biologically dangerous to be used as fertilizer or anything like that. There's not a whole lot you can do with human excrement. So this is a fantastic usage for it.
It's a great usage for it. I mean, and you can actually take, once you have dried it, and I'm just going to let you know that you can actually use human excrement for fertilizer.
Once you've processed it
and sanitized it, and it is used as fertilizer in many areas of the world. But this is part of the process. And so as the gas comes off during the entire treatment plant process, this is one more use for the gases.
So you can use it for both?
Sure.
And that's even better.
Because the methane is a gas you take, and then you actually take the nutrients,
so
what's
in the
left over.
In the process of treating it for the becoming fertilizer, you get the methane out of it and you use it for powering your car.
Biogas.
That's great.
Mike, are you listening? This is a whole episode, possibly a whole year of Dirty Jobs season 27.
Yeah.
I think we're on to something, gang.
All right, let's move on to the calendar.
Yeah, today Amazon, their Kindle store opens in the UK. A lot of British news today. 400,000 titles, 170 different magazines and newspapers. And in all of them, the word color and behavior will both have U's in them and be spelled properly.
And gray will be spelled with an E.
Yeah, I still get confused about that. This is going to blow your minds. It's back to school already. Public schools in the South started this week in many states. And why this is important for you? Because a lot of states, 18 in fact, have tax-free, sales tax-free weekends associated with back to school. A lot of them are this weekend or next weekend. And those are great times to buy computer peripherals, which in many cases are covered under the back to school stuff, and computers, in fact. So just a heads up on that one. This is interesting. Next Patch Tuesday. You know how Microsoft releases all of its patches on a Tuesday?
Yep.
Well, next Patch Tuesday is going to set a record. We have 14 bulletins, 8 of which are rated critical, 6 apply to Windows, another one to jointly to Windows and Silverlight, and the last one to the Office suite. So I don't know, good news or bad, Microsoft's really on it, but a lot of vulnerabilities. So if you're wondering if it's time to patch, heads up, next Patch Tuesday.
Next Patch Tuesday is this coming Tuesday. It's a record setting.
And they're on Wednesday, aren't they, having a big FAQ session? So answer consumers' questions about the patches.
Yeah, they had an out-of-cycle patch this time, too, which is unusual for them. They had to fix that shortcut link thing. So you probably need to patch your Windows machine right now anyway. Don't wait for Patch Tuesday. And then set aside a lot of time, because I think 7 or 8 of these critical vulnerabilities require a restart.
Yay. Yes.
All right, let's move on to our voicemail. Trevor is a little behind, but he heard our conversation about Facebook's new Q&A feature, and he's got some thoughts to share with us.
Hey, TNT Show, it's Trevor in Wisconsin. Hey, I'm about a week behind, but you guys are talking about Facebook and the Facebook Answers, where you post a public question to get an answer, comparing it to Yahoo Answers and how worthless that is. I think because with Facebook, to be using your real identity, I think people are more apt to give better answers. That's my defense. Talk to you guys later. Love the show.
So that's an interesting thought. The fact that, you know, on Yahoo, you can just sort of be anonymous. You can make up an ID and log in. Facebook, people have a lot more identity tied to it. But could Facebook fall to the same problem where people just make up Facebook identities? Or is the culture such that that's less likely to happen?
Yeah, it definitely seems that having your real identity tied to this will change your motivation for answering. It's not just random musings to the internet. It's your personal testimonial. So I think that's a good point.
Yeah, I still don't think this is going to be a very successful effort for Facebook.
No.
On to our next caller, who has a thought on the iPhone that we thought we had answered earlier this week, but then, of course, found some part of the question that we hadn't answered.
Hi, Tom. A question about the iPad and the jailbreaking. I jailbroke my iPad, didn't like what it did, so I did a full reinitialization and restore of the whole thing, and everything's back as it was before. Is my warranty still voided? Thanks. It's François Carroll. Bye.
Yes. And we got a bunch of people emailed this, too. Like, well, wait a minute. If I restore it and they can't tell, then my warranty's not voided. Well, just because you didn't get caught doesn't mean you didn't make the crime. So
is there a log of the of activity in the phone that can be detected?
That's the base question, right? Mm-hmm. Which is, can they tell that you've restored it? As far as I know, no, they can't. But it's always possible. There have been, I can think of one jailbreak where they could tell that you had done it and restored it. And then there was a fix for that to get around that. Mm. Most of the time, no. Most of the time, there's no way to tell. I don't know about this jailbreak. When I say I don't know, I mean, I haven't seen anyone say absolutely not.
Right.
But I also haven't seen anyone say this is the evidence it leaves behind. So if you jailbreak, it's at your own risk. When you restore, it's most likely that they're not going to be able to tell. Like if you break the glass, restore it, take it in, they're not going to look that closely. They're going to fix your glass for you, right?
Yeah.
You know, you might even be able to leave it jailbroken and they might not tell, but I wouldn't risk that. But have you still voided your warranty? Yes, you have voided your warranty. Can you get away with having warranty repairs even though they're voided your warranty because they don't know you voided your warranty?
Yes.
But that doesn't mean you didn't void your warranty. It just means they didn't catch you.
Yeah.
So you know, it's a fine point, I suppose.
Ooh, you can feel like a teenage lawbreaker.
That's right.
You know, a little teenage shoplifter or something.
You walk into the Apple store and there's a polygraph. Did you jailbreak it? Did you jailbreak it? I'll ask you again. Did you jailbreak it?
Answer the question.
Answer.
On to the email to TNT.
I don't care.
Twit.tv. I just want the iPhone. Our first email comes from Steven, the SMB consultant in Calgary, Alberta, Canada, who says, Tom, thought you may be interested in this story. It looks like TELUS, a Canadian telephone, mobile, and internet provider, is going to be allowing customers to use the Xbox 360 instead of purchasing a digital box. So, yeah, TELUS will allows you to use your... Well, allows you. Dell allows you to use your Xbox gaming consoles up there in Canada as a console digital service. So you can get your TV over your Xbox.
I'm going to read this email from Kim Helliwell in San Jose, California. And she makes a point that Tom actually made in one of our meetings, and we forgot to mention it on air.
No, you didn't.
So we talked about a case. She says, you were talking about the Long Island town that used Google Earth to look for unpermitted pools. Well, a couple used a helicopter a few years ago to fly across around the entire coastline of California taking high-res pics. CaliforniaCoastline.org, the purpose was to document the ecological status of the coast. The pictures were published, and one of the pictures was of Barbara Streisand's house and backyard. Streisand took umbrage, and she sued, and in the end, Streisand lost and had to pay damages and attorney's fees for the couple. The basic deal is airspace is owned by the public, and anyone can fly over anyone's property and anyone's chickens. She didn't say that, but I'm adding that for Tom.
Thank you.
Because he was concerned about his chickens being bothered. And the irony, she says, the delicious irony was that because Streisand made such a fuss about the picture, it became quite famous and was one of the most viewed website pictures on the internets for a long time.
Oh, I remember we covered this in the early days of Buzz Out Loud, and the point was, like, we had no idea Barbara Streisand lived there until she complained.
Right?
Well, yeah. On to ST in Phoenix, who says, I'm just reading Information Week's recap of Black Hat and thought this little nugget seemed to escape everyone's coverage. After so much browser research, does Jeremiah Grossman recommend one browser over the others? This is a quote from a darkreading.com post. Grossman says, IE8 is technically secure, but it's targeted because it's so widespread. Firefox is not bad, but I outlined some design flaws in my talk. Chrome is also pretty good, but it comes with what amounts to Google spyware, and there's no sandbox. So despite being targeted the most, he seems to be saying, says ST in Phoenix, that IE8 is the most secure.
All things come full circle. I'm actually, you know, kind of happy to have positive Microsoft news. And given the heat that they've taken for so many years, you would think that they would have it locked down, so...
This is the kind of conversation that you and a friend over a good smoke or a bottle of whiskey can go long into the night arguing about because there really isn't a definitive answer. What Grossman seems to be saying to me here is that all three of these browsers are good, but they have issues. IE8's issue is that it's targeted, so it's more likely to spring a leak faster than the other two. But he does seem to imply that it's a little bit more secure, and I've heard that from other sources too, that Microsoft has really been buckling down on the security, and IE8 is one of the great ones. And I was talking on Windows Weekly with Paul Thurrott earlier today that IE9 is going to be close to 100% standards compliant. At least that seems to be their goal. So IE is turning into the most respectable browser on the block because of the competition. So you don't want them to grow their market share too fast, or else they'll get lazy and fat again, and they'll come out with another IE6. So keep using Firefox and Chrome just enough to keep them honest.
So all that bitching we did about earlier versions of Internet Explorer has come to some good.
Yes, some good, at least. At least one can hope.
They listened to you. They made something better.
Twitter is down. What? Well, breaking news. Twitter is down, somebody said in the chat room. It's over capacity. Farewell. All right.
Well.
We will come back every 5 minutes with a special report on the state of Twitter. But until then, thank you, Dr. Kiki. Thank you, Becky. Thanks to everybody for watching. You can reach us, TNT, at twit.tv or twit.tv/TNT. That's our website. And call us. You never call anymore. 260-TNT-SHOW. We'll see you next time.